Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Andrea Bernstein in for Brian Lehrer on WNYC and WNYC.org. Here's some math, actually my favorite subject. One writer, 500,000 followers, 140 characters multiplied by 2524 contributions. What does that equal? One new book from David Pogue, the New York Times tech columnist, who is here with me to talk about The World According to Twitter, out now from Black Dog Press. The book is comprised entirely of tweets from David's 500,000 followers on Twitter, which lets users share small bursts of information with each other. Add them all up, and Pogue thinks there is real wisdom in the Twitter crowd. David Pogue, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Now, before we start talking about your book, I just have to say that, I'm trying hard. I have my Facebook account. I set it up. And I actually have a Twitter account, and I have an awful lot of followers. But I haven't, I haven't quite gotten to the point of where I feel it's incumbent upon me to tell people all the time what I'm doing. So perhaps you can start off by just explaining, like, what is that, mystique? What is it that, causes people to say, I'm walking the dog now, I'm buying my newspaper now, and why do people want to know?
Well, I'll start by rocking your world. That is not what you should be doing on Twitter.
Okay.
they sort of set themselves up for defeat by labeling the little box where you type, what are you doing? But that is not what people are interested in. You are absolutely correct. And if I hear one more people say, why do I care what you had for lunch today? I'm going to pull my hair out.
Okay, so what should people be doing?
What you should be doing is sharing observations, passing along news, sending jokes, passing along links to cool things you've seen on the web, asking questions, participating in conversation.
That's what you do, right? You ask people questions and ask them to tell you things, for example, cure to the hiccups?
Yeah, exactly. In fact, that's how this whole thing started. I was trying to demonstrate Twitter in front of an audience. And so I said, let me show you. There's never been a forum quite like this. It's two-way. It's real-time. It's targeted people. And I said, for example, what's your favorite cure for hiccups? And in 10 seconds, all these responses from my followers started rolling back on the big screen. And they were funny. It's not like the morons on YouTube comments or MySpace or whatever. These are like, I later found out 80% of Twitter people have college education. The average age is 35. It's not.
Really?
It's not teenagers. And they were like, cure for hiccups. Just hold your breath until Windows 7 comes out. Or open your 401k statement. That'll cure the hiccups right away. And I told my wife about this. I'm like, those people are really funny. And without blinking an eye, she goes, you should do that. You should ask a question every night and then publish the funniest results in a book.
And that's what you did. Now, there are still some skeptics, and I wanted to play you a clip of technology writer Clive Thompson from a panel that WNYC's On the Media did at the Aspen Ideas Festival. He remains a skeptic.
Twitter is used by an extraordinarily small sliver of society. I mean, 1 in 10 adults use it, and it's mostly well-educated men, by and large, when you look at the statistics. So, and almost no young people at all are using Twitter, certainly not college age.
So Clive Thompson is essentially saying that the people using Twitter are people like him or you or Brian Lehrer, who loves to tweet and, explain to me that Twitter is not really a verb.
I think he's making my case. He hoped to demean it, but by saying it's educated, older, smart people. He's just saying exactly why it's great. And look, I too was a skeptic. My first New York Times write-up about Twitter, I called it yet another ego-massaging time drain. It takes a week. You need to keep using it. And then one day something will hit you between the eyes and you'll realize I never would have gotten that information through email or a website. So, and about not many people use it. I mean, come on, millions and millions, not to mention, does it matter how many use it? If it's fantastic, who cares?
So tell us about some of your most fun questions and your most fun answers.
Oh, sure. I mean, what I found is that there's a special talent that certain people have that they have no other forum for, which is the one-line joke. So, for example, one of the challenges was compose the subject line of an email you really don't want to open. And the answers were like, to my former sexual partners as required by law. Or Ari, what seems to have been your car, and perhaps my favorite, from your publisher, subject, ha, good one. Could you send the real chapter now, please? You would definitely not want to open that one.
So all of this seems like a lot of fun. You know, I'm sort of wondering, I mean, you know, how much sort of in-depth information can you sort of, you know, get from this? I mean, it's sort of like, you know, you walk into a room and, you know, there's 1,000 people there and you're like, hey, guys, give me your one line answer. But like sort of, you know, then what?
Well, I mean, in terms of this book, it is a humor book. It is filed in the humor section. But there are also some more serious things. I ask people to describe their most embarrassing moments ever. One of my favorites is a coworker asked me if I had a sec to help a customer. My reply, I have lots of secs. Most embarrassing moment ever. Or your greatest regret. Or one time I said, describe your 15 minutes of fame. You cannot believe who came out of the woodwork. One guy wrote, my stepfather was the agony of defeat guy on ABC's Wild Wide World of Sports, the car crashing at the Daytona 500.
I thought that was a skier that skied off a mountain.
Yeah, there's he says right before the skier.
Oh, right before the skier.
And then they show this
car
crash.
Oh, my God, I forgot. But now I remember.
And then I heard from the girl who's on the Girl Scout cookies box for the last 9 years. That's her picture.
Now, you know, there are all sorts of people. There's like the whole sort of Twitter versus Facebook debate. And there are people who sort of like, don't waste your time with Facebook. It's not really targeted. You can really target Twitter. You should, you know, really try Twitter. You know, do you sort of have a position on that? And you sort of, you know, would you denigrate Facebook or say it's a waste of time?
No, I'm actually a little baffled by all the comparisons. I mean, they serve two different functions. Yes, there's a what are you doing now component to Facebook as well. But also, again, I think the demographic is really different. I mean, in my experience, and maybe it's just because my followers tend to be like my demographic, but I've found them to be literate and funny and older and educated and
just like you.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Handsome, tall. But Facebook began life as a service for college students. So they later opened it up, but it tends to be a younger group.
Is there any threat here of people not being able to sort of hang on to a narrative arc that, you know, sort of, you know, what you can say in, what is it, 140 characters,
160, yep.
140 characters.
Yep.
You know, I mean, there's a whole lot of, you know, I mean, a haiku is great, but, you know, a haiku is not War and Peace.
Right. But, I mean, did anyone say that question when haiku came out? Oh, here's a three-line poem. This is the end of poetry. I mean, I do hear
Yeah, except that you can really spend all your time tweeting. I always want to say Twittering, but I will just invoke Brian Lehrer again. Twitter is not a verb. But, you know, I mean, there are people who do that, or the people that clearly are spending all their time on Facebook writing these, you know, very short things. And, you know, I sort of, you know, I look at my daughter and, you know, everything is like a sort of text message length. And it's a really hard thing to sit down with something that, you know, sort of takes a long time for payoff.
Well, except that. If we're saying what's going to happen to books, for example, well, book sales are only skyrocketing. They're not impacted by this at all. The one thing I've learned in 10 years writing about technology for the New York Times is in technology, things don't replace things. Things just add on, right? So radio didn't go away when TV came along, and movie theaters didn't go away when the DVD came out. And it's the same thing with Twitter. It's not the end of anything. It's just the beginning of another channel.
The whole sort of tweet discussion really, you know, I would say kicked up into sort of, you know, extremely high gear over, you know, the discussion of the events in Iran. To what extent are people's tweets to each other, you know, going to sort of replace journalism? And, you know, I know that, you know, I mean, I guess I personally believe that there's a sort of role for people to have these, you know, ongoing conversations. But, you know, what threatens to happen is people sort of rely more on that than the sort of role of, you know, the professional whose job it is to process information recedes.
Well, there's that word again, replace. Twitter will not replace journalism. It won't replace anything. Nothing replaces anything. It does turn out to be, you know what it is? Here's the thing. Everyone keeps trying to say Twitter is this, Twitter is that. Twitter is just a channel. It's like when the telephone was invented, should we have all said, wait, this is the end of journalism, or this is the end of books, or
oh,
this
but
is the
don't you think that the internet sort of – I mean, I was just in Vermont on vacation recently, and I was with some friends, one of whom had gone to J school, another professional writer, and they were reading the newspaper on their iPod. So, you know, there is a channel, but, you know, there is sort of the, you know, question of, you know, what that channel does. And, you know, do you really think it doesn't have any effect?
I think it's a new channel for exactly the same kinds of information that we've currently been sending on the phone and web pages and email. It just happens to be one with certain characteristics that make it especially useful for instantaneous transmission among people you know that you're connected with.
Recently, Scott Simon of NPR, and I don't mean to single out Scott Simon, but he sent out a tweet asking for information. And one of the responses he got was, if NPR hadn't fired all these professional journalists, you wouldn't need to be asking us.
Yeah. Is there a question in there?
Well, I guess the question is, you know, sort of, I mean, you know, is this becoming sort of, you know, a way for, you know, news organizations to sort of, you know, again, diminish the role of the professional?
The thing is, so I haven't been fired, and none of my resources have gone away, and most of the New York Times newsroom is still intact. But it doesn't mean that it isn't a fantastic tool for us. So, for example, I have to do a web video every single week. And one night, it was 10:30 p.m., and the camera crew was coming the next day, and I didn't have a cast yet. I had only just come up with the concept for the video. What am I supposed to do? So on to Twitter, I said, who wants to be in my CNBC video this week? Can you be at my house in Connecticut at noon tomorrow? I had 20 people respond in 15 minutes. I chose them according to their pictures and what they sounded like. I had four people. They showed up. They were great. Or let's say I'm a real newsman. Let's say I'm a serious person. I want to open my column.
Say, for example.
Yeah, in the unlikely event. So let's say I want to open my story with an anecdote about somebody who's been affected by, say, the stimulus money. So how am I going to find somebody like that quickly? Well, this is a way to sweep the world and find out exactly the person I'm looking for.
Let's take a couple of comments from listeners. One from our comments page. A listener writes, Twitter is actually a major source of news for me. Following CNN, The New York Times, and The HuffPost, plenty of Obama news and White House streams, I also get my celebrity news gossips. So it helps to offset my limited TV consumption. And I think Ben from Greenwich Village has a reaction to your comment about the media. Is that right, Ben?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Well, you say that technology doesn't get replaced. It just supplements itself and gets added on. But how come you can't buy a Polaroid camera anymore? How come no one's hunting with spears anymore? I mean, I think technology always replaces older technology once it becomes ubiquitous.
Okay, I was referring to consumer technology. So,
well, cameras, Polaroid, that's consumer technology.
Yep, film went away and the 8-track went away, but I can give you many more examples. So LP records are still around. Everyone's using iTunes, but CDs will still be around. You know, I think there are many more examples that show that things don't replace things in consumer tech, especially not when it's something like, will Twitter replace journalism, or will Twitter replace books? You know, will the Kindle replace printed books?
Well, clearly
no.
Twitter was the basis of a book, so
yeah, exactly.
Lucky for you. Now, I mean, do you have any worries at all? I mean, you know, obviously, our web producer Amy Pearl is in here, and she wants me to Twitter more. So in the studio with us now, taking photos, which we will be posting on our website later. You know, obviously, this is a way of communication. It is a way of reaching people. As a journalist, it's awfully fun to be able to ask 500,000 people a question and get all these answers. Do you have any worries, though, about the way people express themselves, the way people perform journalism, or do you just think it's all good?
If anything, I think Twitter is an excellent exercise in being concise. You know, Twitter also does something else kind of weird. There's a different set of expectations in terms of responses. So people don't really expect you to read everything from the people you signed up to follow, and people don't really expect you to reply to everything that's sent to you. It's much more like a big global cocktail party where you can drift from cluster to cluster and tune in when you like it.
Okay, and we're going to have to end it there. Make sure you check out my Twitter feed, I'll try to Twitter. Joining us has been David Pogue, New York Times tech columnist and author of The World According to Twitter. Andrea Bernstein in for Brian Lehrer. Talk to you soon.